Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and today we have a really nice lineup. We're going to talk about some baby quilts, we're going to talk about some behind the scenes, and then we're going to skip on over to Australia, and we're going to chat a little bit over there. So first up, I have Angela Yostin. Angela's been on here before. She has got like such great ideas about all things, you know, quilty, but what I like is a lot of her projects are small, and they're really doable, and they're grid for, you know, when you need to get things done. So Angela's new book is called So Modern Baby, and I'm really happy to have her here. Hi, Angela.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Can you hear me okay?
I can. I can hear you fine.
Oh, good. We've got a little ice storm down here, so I'm not sure if you can hear me okay or not.
I know. Well, you know, my area, Angela, right now, we have part of the area is out of electric, and, you know, so I'm lucky, though. I have beautiful ice palace outside my window, but it's not affecting me. So that's really good.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about this new book, So Modern Baby. What inspired you to put together a baby book?
I actually was pregnant with our third child when I came up with the idea for So Modern Baby. And, you know, everything that's in it was inspired by having a new baby and trying to educate an infant, you know, at a young age.
So you wanted to put together some projects that were, you know, doable, probably for you to make so that, you know, when you were not having a lot of time, I suppose.
Right, right. Yeah, I wanted to have something quick and easy that any mom can make quickly for a baby because you don't really have a whole lot of time or spare time when you have a little baby around. And something that would be able to be used as the baby grows up and used from generations to come as well. So that's
so you
the
have
whole
like,
heirloom quality.
Yeah, you know, you have between quilts. I like that you put together like a whole series of projects, things, like you said, that can be there forever, and then quick and fun projects like the really cute big squares that like the little boxes that they can play with, and of course
the blocks.
Yeah, the blocks, that's the word. Oh, it's gonna be what it's called. So some of those things, the kids are just gonna wear them out. They're not gonna be around forever.
Right. Yeah. And I did try to like with the blocks, they're jumbo blocks. So the biggest one is actually probably half the size of a baby. I mean it's pretty large, like a toddler. It's probably the size of, probably the size of an infant, but half the size of a toddler.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, they are
They're
huge.
Really large blocks. Yeah. So they're made with linen. And what I used was linen and some high contrast fabrics on all the projects just to keep that heirloom quality about them, but also something where the baby or the toddler can learn from. So with that, the color and the sounds, there's actually rattling noises that come or that are inside of the blocks. And they're just, you know, something where they can learn and, you know, touch, feel, hear, all those different senses. So.
And you included things for the mom. I just love that you have a card holder in here and your reason for putting it in there. Tell me why you included that. That is just the best.
I actually have one of those in my purse. It's so much easier to pull it out of your bag, of your baby bag, or even just your purse, and use your reward cards because they're in the little plastic sleeves. So you don't really have to pull that card out. you just swivel it out and they can scan right through the plastic, the clear plastic. So it really helps for moms because they don't have to shuffle through a bunch of cards. They can just fan out which one they need and have it scan and then put it back quickly. So it's great for moms that have little kids, so you don't have to mess with
a
bunch of
one.
Mess.
I'm going to make that for me.
So, I love it. Every time I pull mine out, the checkout person is always going, oh, that is so cool. Where did you get that? I'm like, oh, you can make one.
Yeah. Here's my business card. Yeah. So where did you get the plastic for that, Angela? So can you just go to the craft store and buy those little plastic inserts?
You can go to like Office Depot or Office Max, your office supply store you can go to and get. And they're just those ID plastic sleeves that you would normally hang from a lanyard. They're just ID sleeves. And so I use them inside that thing, punch a hole in the corner and stick them in the little case that you make for it.
Right. Oh, neat. And you used a lot of linen in this book, which I just love linen. Why did you decide to do that?
I love linen. I've always loved using linen in projects just because it gives it a very heirloom quality look to it. And it's very durable linen. You know, you can actually spilt some coffee over the weekend on some linen and it came right out, which is great.
real life.
So it's very durable. And yeah, very real life. Real life accidents and situations. Yeah. But it's very durable. It's a great fabric to use, and it mixes well with really any kind of fabric. I used it because I love it and just wanted to have it incorporated. I love the look that it gives all the projects with the high contrast feel, kind of tones them down a little bit.
Do you have to do anything special with linen to prep it for working with it if people are used to using regular cotton?
Not really. I don't. Just iron it just so it doesn't have that wrinkled look on it while I'm working with it. And just so I know I'm working with accurate sizes when I cut, I just make sure it's, you know, starched well and I use the best pressed sprays. And then I just iron it really well while I'm sewing with it. And then afterward, it really just kind of gives it that, when you wash it, it wrinkles up with the rest of the cottons in there and it looks kind of warm and cozy.
Oh, nice. So tell me about, there was one project, the one we were flipping through the book together the other month when we saw each other, and I'm like, okay, well, you have to explain this, and then you were like cracking up because your editor had to explain the same thing to her, because I'm not a mom, and so I never, you know, these things didn't exist when my friends were moms, you know, when we were all younger. So, you know, you have this nursing cover up with the Clippy. So explain what the Clippy is all about.
Okay. Yeah. The nursing cover up, there's a couple of things in that one I did that's a little bit unique. The Clippy I did, and it can be used in the hair for afterward, but mainly it's to mark the left or right side of which side you last fed on if you breastfeed. A lot of, you know, most moms know, but I mean, sometimes, you know, you get so engorged that you don't really remember which one you last fed on.
Like,
so the Clippy just helps. Yeah. The Clippy just helps you remember which side you last fed on. So that way you can feed on the next side the next time it's feeding time for baby. And then you just move the Clippy to, you know, the left or right side, so you remember for next time to feed. And then there's
it's
like
so
a hidden
clever.
Pocket in the nursing cover as well. So you can put your cell phone in there to help with your timing, because you're supposed to only feed, you know, 15 minutes. Some people are very strict on that. So you can have your cell phone with you with your timer and stick it in that hidden pocket that's in the nursing cover up.
Perfect. So you've thought of everything. That's because you're a mom. That's, you know, you've gone through it.
I've gone through it 3 times.
Three times. Okay, so what do you have a favorite project in this book that you know that when you open it up, you're like, oh yes, I love that one the best.
My favorite one is the owl. There is a little Ollie the owl that I made for this book, and he's just so much fun. He's got fabric feathers that are all stitched on his body, and so they won't come off if the baby tries to pull on them. They're very well stitched on, and there's no buttons or anything, so there's no loose parts that can come off. When baby plays and teeths on it, so
And I imagine it's so textural because they can lift the feathers on it and really, you know, get excited about it.
yeah, it's a lot of fun, and a lot of color is in on that owl as well, so
Yay! So everybody, you have to see Angela's book, So Modern Baby, and Angela's website is angelayostin.com. Also, Angela's you know works with the Motivate Shop, and she has lots of cool projects out there. What is your favorite project that you've done for the Motivate Shop, Angela?
I would have to say it's the placemats to go. It's just right now that's my favorite one. Just having 3 kids, and if you're on the go, it's nice because it keeps them busy with a little chalkboard fabric in the center of the cotton fabrics, and then it rolls up with chalk inside it, so you can take it anywhere you go and roll it out at a restaurant, and they can play on it.
Yeah, it's got like little pockets for the chalk so that they stay secured, which I think is really brilliant.
Well, thank you.
Is that a painted chalkboard on that one, just before we go? Or did you buy
No,
it?
it's actually the chalk cloth. It's
Okay.
the vinyl chalk cloth that you put in there, and you just sew your fabrics onto it. It's really easy to work with. It's actually a great material to
Perfect.
use
Well,
on kids'
Angela, this has been
projects.
so much fun. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
We'll be back after this break when I have a session that I did prior with Jennifer Keltner at American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine. We're giving you a behind the scenes. So we'll be right back after this break.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm here at the American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine studio in Des Moines, Iowa, with Jennifer Keltner, the editor of the magazine. So, Jennifer, we're going to talk about some more magazines behind the scenes.
All the secrets.
All the secrets. American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine and Quilts and More are the two sort of main quilt magazines that come out on a regular basis.
Right. American Patchwork and Quilting is our subscription title, so it's 6 times a year, every other month. And Quilts and More can be found at newsstands, and we put that out quarterly, four times a year.
Now, how do you get the submissions for these two magazines? Because there's a lot of projects in each one.
Absolutely. And we, of course, work with great quilt designers around the country and around the world to submit design ideas. And some of those names are very familiar to our readers. And you, of course, have submitted a lot of projects mm-hmm. to us, and we've featured quite a few of them, and our readers love your stuff. Mm-hmm. But one thing I think people don't know is that we also have published the first designs for a lot of people. So whether people are novices and just starting out as quilt designers, or they're very experienced and our readers have come to know and love them over the years, we publish for all of those.
Right. If it's a great design, give it a go.
Absolutely. We don't care if it's your first design or your 400th design. If it's great, we'd love to publish it. So we do take submissions all mm-hmm. the time, and we start with an electronic submission. Because we don't own the projects that we buy, we just have them on loan to us for a while. We mm-hmm. have a storage, space issue. We can't have 500 quilts sitting around the office. So we always start with an email, and anyone is welcome to submit their design ideas. They can send them to apq@meredith.com, and Meredith is M-E-R-E-D-I-T-H, mm-hmm. apq@meredith.com, and in the subject line, just put, design submission. And from there, we look at all those design ideas. And if we're starting to work with someone electronically, you can send swatches of the fabric, a photo of that, a picture or a drawing of the project. If it's completed already, you can send us a photo of the finished work. But it doesn't necessarily have to be. It can just be the idea.
Now, what I really want to know is, how do you develop the issue itself? I mean, are they standalone? Do you look at them across the whole year?
Great question. We do look at it as sort of a whole package. So let's talk about American Patchwork and Quilting. When we look at that, we sort of view it like a class syllabus as we look at the whole year. Mm. And if you're a subscriber in this particular year, what kinds of things do you want to learn? We're always about teaching people new techniques and new ideas, or looking for different tools and things that you might want to work with. And then we're also looking at projects over the course of the year to make sure that we get a range of things for you to work on.
So you'll sort of space it out and know in advance that you want to have some teaching things, some types of projects?
Absolutely. We try to have some sort of learning topic for every particular issue, but then we also kind of give it an overarching theme. We might have a storage and organization issue. We might have an issue themed around color and the selection of colors. So there are lots of different themes that we come up with, and we come up with six big themes for the year for all of those issues and make sure that they're all different from one another.
Well, now I'm curious now, when you've picked the quilt, do you ever have, the quilt actually comes here.
Right.
I mean, I know because I send them. But do people ever just send you photos and you never get the quilt, or do the quilts always arrive?
The quilts always arrive. Okay. For the quilts that we publish, we try to, once we have that sort of overarching theme for the issue, then we pick out the projects. And in American Patchwork and Quilting, there are usually somewhere between 8 to 10 projects in an issue. And we get those in. We're usually always working at least 6 to 8 months out. So if it's Christmas at your house, it's, summertime here with us when we're actually shooting those photos. So it's a little bit out of season. You're calendar challenged when you're in the magazine business. But we actually have those projects in-house. And once we get them all in here, we have a big group meeting with our editorial and design team. And we sit and talk about how we think this quilt should be best photographed. Does it fit on a bed? If you see a bed quilt in American Patchwork and Quilting and it's made on the bed, we're really diligent about making sure that it fits a bed. Mm-hmm. There's no fudge factor there. We're not showcasing it on a bed if it doesn't fit a bed. Now, if it's folded across the bottom of the bed, that's an indication that it maybe isn't a bed-size quilt, but it's more like a throw. But we try to look and make sure we know how we're going to photograph it, what we're going to feature about it. If there's a little learning that can go on with it, it's an interesting technique. The designer mm-hmm. uses a different way of applique. We talk about all those things. And then as quilters, because all of our staff is quilters as well, we try to talk about what would I want to know about this quilt? What would I want to see to make sure you get just the right detail photos or just the right set of instructions?
And the instructions are done by the designer, by you, by both of you? What's that
process for general?
So the short answer is yes. it's done by all. The designer sends in her instructions. But we know great quilt designers aren't always great instruction writers. And we know that readers have come to expect a certain level of quality from American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine. So we take those original instructions, we revise them to our style. And then I think the thing that really differentiates us from some of our competitors in the industry is that we test all of the patterns in American Patchwork and Quilting. And the way we do that is that we send our set of instructions and illustrations and our photography, our flat shot and our styled shot, to our quilt tester, Laura Banky. And she works off-site, and she has the opportunity then to see only what our readers see. I always say to people, you know how sometimes when a friend is making a quilt pattern and you can't really figure out how something goes together and you're looking at her project in your hand and you kind of run your fingers over it and you look at it and you hold it up to the light and you think, okay, now I get how this is done. Well, you don't have that opportunity with the magazine. And so we don't want Laura to have that opportunity either as she's testing those patterns. So we just send her exactly what our readers will see. If she can't make a color option from at least, she does at least four blocks of every pattern. Mm-hmm. So if she can't make that that color option from our instructions, then we know our readers will have a problem and it's back to the drawing board for us. We haven't explained it clearly enough.
That is just incredible. I think everybody really enjoys that they're so well tested. Plus, they like Laura's options.
Right. Laura's color options are always a favorite with our readers. And the thing that I think people maybe don't recognize, one time I was working on a presentation, and so I kind of followed a story from that starting point where it comes in to where it goes to our technical editor at the end, who makes sure that all the math and the yardage and requirements that we've given you and the sizes are correct. There are 21 reads of that manuscript from start to finish. So it's gone back and forth between the editors, the designers, the quilt tester, the technical editor, 21 times. So that's not to say we don't make the occasional mistake, but we really try very hard not to have anything in print that isn't accurate.
And when you're also working on the particular issue, you do something that is kind of unique. I mean, I think it is about how you display it for review, for your editorial review.
Right. So once our design team is done putting the stories together and putting the photos in, we're also at a stage in the process at the end where we pin up the whole issue in a conference room, and you can see the whole thing on one giant wall. And we pin it up full size in full color, and we place it up there. And what we're really looking there for is the pacing of the issue. And most people, when you get a magazine, you lay it down on a table or across your lap, and you can look at two pages at a time, and you flip through. But what people, I think, maybe don't know about is that when we pin that issue up, we're really looking at the flow of the magazine. So we're standing back and saying, okay, we're starting out with something that feels like fall because it's the fall, you know, the fall issue. And so we want to open with something that feels like the season. And then we go from a big project to a little project, or we go from an applique project to a piecing project. And we're also looking at sort of the style or the mood of what we've shot. Is it very traditional? Is it modern? Is it whimsical? And so we kind of really look at the flow of that across the whole issue. And it is fun when people have a chance to see our storyboards in the office and they see an entire issue. You know, there's 140 pages pinned up on the wall and you can see it all at once. You really do have a feel for the pacing of what's going on there.
And you were telling me, I thought it was really interesting that you look at where you place the fabulous advertisements so that, you know, they are something that you can notice.
Right. And that's another thing. We know from our research that readers love the ads as much as they love the editorial because they're often introducing the latest fabric or the latest machines or the newest notions. And so we don't want those to get lost. So if we have a story that's a, you know, cotton candy pink quilt and it's all, you know, very lighthearted and pastel, we try not to put a pastel ad in the middle of that story because we want it to separate from the editorial. We want the ad to get its attention, and we want readers to know the difference between the ads and the editorial. So we do try to look at that as well, and that's the very last stage of the process. Once we've got our pacing lined up, then we place the ads in there, and we, again, look at those in full color and the pacing and the flow of things, and also to give some variety to what's going on because we don't want all the fabric ads in one section and all the machine ads in another section, but we want to mix that up for our readers.
Yeah, it makes it more interesting. Yep. Now, you also have an editorial in the front that you write a little paragraph.
The From the Editor column. Yes. You bet. You bet. And that's always just a place where we have an opportunity to chat with our readers. I often put my own address in there for my email, which is just jennifer@meredith.com. And again, Meredith is M-E-R-E-D-I-T-H, and Jennifer is just spelled the traditional way. Mm-hmm. But you can always email me at jennifer@meredith.com and let me know what you think about what's in that particular issue, or if there's something else that's on your mind that you wish, you know, you have a radio show guest you'd like to hear from, or about any of our products. And I love that opportunity to interact with readers. I get lots of feedback from people who love things, and I also get feedback that I appreciate very much from people who don't like something. And I try to respond and let them know that we appreciate that as much, because unless we hear from people and know what they like or don't like, we can't adjust our next issue. And there is flexibility. We're always looking. One of our copy editors always says, you know, the nice thing about working with a magazine is that you have a chance to reinvent it every 2 months. Mm-hmm. It's not forever. It's just, you know, for this next 2 months, what's the best that you can do? So I enjoy hearing from fans of our brands and hearing what they'd like to see more of or less of, or what they think is missing.
Jennifer, that is excellent, because I think people now can be encouraged to go ahead and write you and read up on that.
Please do.
So this has been fun. Get that behind the scenes. I want to go see that storyboard. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We're going to take a little break.
Actually, I'm still here just for another 30 seconds before we take that break. I am out on the allpeoplequilt.com website, where you can find all kinds of free patterns and tutorials and videos. So if you're trying to learn a technique, go to allpeoplequilt.com and check and see if we might have some write-up or some video there that's going to help you learn that technique. Next up, we are going to Zoom over for a live chat in Australia. Well, we're going to Zoom via Skype. It's always a lot easier. So we'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by BabyLock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am very, very excited to finally have on someone who's, you know, site I've been sort of stalking, I think, for as long as I can remember. Material Obsessions is a quilt shop in Australia, but there is a fabulous, fabulous designer behind all that that works magic with fabric, and she has all of this super stuff that she puts out there and shows us day in and day out. So Kathy Dowdy is here, and I just love that she's an encourager, she's an author, she's designed fabrics. She just does everything. So Kathy, welcome to the show.
Oh, Pat, that was a great introduction. I love myself.
There you go. Well, that's good. Now you can go out and show me more pictures. I am just obsessed with seeing what you have up there. You always have great stuff.
On the blog. Well, the blog is really a very nice way for me to take what happens in a really creative little space and take it out to the world. And It takes a lot of time to put it together, but it's such a pleasure to be able to make everybody a star that does classes in the shop, and also to show the variety of possibilities that are out there when you're making a quilt.
Yeah, we're gonna talk a little bit about that in a bit, but let's do some backstory, because you are an American that relocated to Australia. Did you find quilt making before you went, or did you discover that when you got to Australia?
No, my past life, I grew up in Ohio, which I'm very proud to say, because I always felt like I had a really nice grounding to life growing up, playing in the grass, climbing trees, cowboys and Indians and all that kind of stuff. And then I moved around the states a lot, ended up spending 10 years in New York City, where I worked for Swatch, which I also attribute to being essential in how I quilt, because we concentrated on looking at tradition with a new perspective, a new slant, a more contemporary slant. So having that in my background and arriving in Australia, I had to start my life over. I no longer had a full-time career. I was just recently married. I had children straight away. And all of a sudden, I found myself completely tabula rasa. You know, who is this person now? What am I going to do with myself? And I met a woman who at a children's playgroup, and she gave me a quilt. And when she gave it to me, I looked down, and it was as if every single energy in my life collided into one thing. And I just looked at her and I said, teach me how to do this right now.
I think people can relate to that. It's like you touched fabric again. That was it. Do you think it's the fabric or the process that got you excited?
It was everything. I love the intensity of working with the graphics and the color and the pattern of the fabric. I loved, like, she had made this quilt. It was a scrappy quilt. It was very simply constructed. I loved the fact that I couldn't stop looking at it. I wanted to touch it, inspect it, feel it, discover everything there was about it. But unlike most of my contemporaries, I didn't grow up sewing. So to look at this and say, I want to learn how to do this was completely like, how do you thread a needle? I couldn't sew on a sewing machine because I couldn't figure out how to thread it. And, you know, there were lots of things that stopped me, and I had other things to do. So I never really paid that much attention. But as soon as I had that quilt in my hands, I think I probably spent the next 2 years at the library studying quilting books.
And did you have a quilt shop to go to then, or were you sort of just learning from these buddies, your new buddies?
Well, there was a little shop at the corner of my street called American Patchwork Down Under. She had about 25 bolts of fabric.
Oh my.
She had nothing. And, it wasn't that inspiring, but once I knew what I wanted to do, I was really into recycling fabric. I had some fabric in my house. And here in Australia, it's not like in America, you know, we didn't have any kind of choice. But I just, like I said before, I just spent a lot of time going to the library, where I discovered lots of other artists and lots of different styles. I mean, a particular one I remember was Janet Bolton. You know, I picked up this book by this woman and thought, oh, wow, this is amazing. Look at this. And another, you know, there were some Australian designers. And I think Quilts and More Quilts was the one I finally settled on, owned it. And I worked every pattern in the book until I could figure out how to do it.
Yeah,
I think I could tell you it might be amusing to imagine sitting at swimming lessons with my little boy, turning to the woman next to me and saying, do you know what a quarter inch seam is?
Oh, no.
So I started with nothing.
Oh, goodness. When you started to learn and, you know, you had these new friends, when did you sort of gravitate to sort of building this community that eventually became a quilt shop?
Well, a community is probably the most important word in my quilting life, because I was very lonely when I moved here and I really needed to make friends. So it took me a while. I mean, I have to say, there's a couple of different things that happened. I had one or two friends that were quilting, but most of the time I was doing it by myself. And that went on for about six years. I made quilts for my family in America. I made quilts for all my friends' kids. Much like, you know, Angela was talking about, when you have a baby in your home, you've got a little bit of spare time and you want to use it productively. But then we moved to a new area and I met a gal who kept saying to come along to my quilt group with me. And I thought, you're kidding me. I couldn't imagine what that was like. And finally, after probably a year of coercing, I went along with her. Mm-hmm. And she said, okay, it's show and tell time. Hold up your quilts. And I held up my quilts and everybody clapped. And I went, oh, yeah. This is nice. I think I could see this. But that ended up being a very strong place for me to rest my head and heart in Australia. And I've met lots of women at, women in their 80s, women in their 30s, women in their 40s, and everybody came from different parts of life. And I just loved the fact that we'd sit around the table with busy hands talking about things that were going on in our life. And it was just really rewarding. So that's still 15 years later, a big part of my life. But at that time, yeah.
I was going to say, because you have people now, you have at least from your blog that we can see, is like there's always this community, and it's always what you're sharing is your customers, your friends, your students coming in to quilt together.
Well, that grew very slowly, Pat. In the beginning, when we first, at the quilt group is where I met Sarah Filkey, who was my original partner at Material Obsession. And we were looking to start a business together. Mm-hmm. And this little shop on the corner became available. So we bought into that. And our main goal at that point was to have a shop that had spots and stripes, because that's what we were looking for in our quilts. And we couldn't find them anywhere. But I kid you not, people used to come in there. There are two significant things. People used to come in and whisper to each other, "This shop will never last." And we used to look at each other and go, no, it's gonna last. We love what we're doing. But the other thing was, people used to walk in with these very, like holding a little plastic bag filled with sampler blocks.
Yeah.
And they'd walk around the shop, wait a couple of minutes and say, 13 years ago, I started this sampler quilt and it was so hard I couldn't finish it. What can I do now?
Yeah.
And so we started doing simple quilts that people could make easily in a short amount of time, because time is of the essence when you have, it in our lives these days. And it just took off. Those simple patterns suited the contemporary fabrics that were starting to come in. Kay Fassett started doing fabric then. Amy Butler started doing fabric. Then we saw Anna Maria Horner. And all of these people slotted in beautifully with the style of quilts that we wanted to make.
So tell me a little bit about the fabrics. Are you mostly having the same fabrics in your shop that we have in the U.S.?
Well, until recently, almost everything that we sold in the shop came through American distributors to Australia, which is why our fabrics are so much more expensive than yours. I mean, my customers are paying upwards of $20 a meter for the fabric, because it's produced in Asia generally, goes to America, gets shipped over here, and then that adds so much cost, so many cost levels into it that so we have to be a little bit more careful in our selection. Mm-hmm. But now, like, for example, with my current range of Wandering Mind, that's been produced locally. So the cost of my range is going to start at about $15 a meter here in Australia. And I think that's a really good movement in the market to start looking at this as a separate entity and bringing something new and cheaper to our desperate quilters.
And so your fabric line that you have now is produced in Australia? Or at least
it's produced here. It's printed in Korea, like most of the other.
Right.
It's printed in Asia, but it's produced by my distributor, Lutenegger, here. And so I worked very closely with the designer. I drew it up by hand and then went straight in there and worked with her, which I really appreciated, because she was able, and when I got sick earlier in the year, she came to my house and we worked out all the colors that we wanted to use and went through this really laborious but wonderful process of saying, this is what I like, this is how I want it to look. And I'm just most grateful for the whole process, because it's come out to be exactly what I wanted it to look like.
Well, since we're at that point, we kind of talked about the fabric. So we'll just flow. Why don't you tell me what your fabric line looks like and what the colors are? Describe it to us.
It's called A Wandering Mind, which one of my coworkers named, because I tend to drift around from subject to subject, as you might realize. But the initial idea of the line was, I've got a growing collection of Kantha quilts, which are quilts made from saris that were designed in the 1920s and 30s in India. And when the Indian woman would stop wearing it, she would often layer 1, 2, 3, and sometimes up to 6 layers of these saris and quilt through them with, the all over stitching and straight lines. Mm-hmm. And as I sit and gaze at these Kantha quilts, I thought, oh, this is a great place to start for a line. So I looked at bringing the stitching into it, which gives it a nice sort of look to, a handmade kind of a look. And I've got this big, glorious bird that I mean, as in my position buying fabric for the shop, I'm always looking for big birds, for medallions, for big blocks, or because people seem to like that. We just don't get to see that many. We see lots of little birds, but not big ones. So there's one big dramatic bird, and then I've got some trailing vines for making strip quilts and some really nice starry borders. What else is in there? lots of leaves and flowers. But the colors, I think, might surprise people because I've tended to sit right between the traditional and the contemporary. Mm-hmm. So I've got lots of roses and muted aquas and nice, rich, mustardy yellows and golds in it. So it's quite – look, I've had a great response to it, so I'm really happy.
That do you have it, like, on your site or on one of your blog posts? So that
we will – yeah, we'll have it up on the site by the end of the week.
Okay. Good. Because if you want to go to materialobsession.com.au, so that's where you can see Kathy's work. And from there, you can get to the blog and stuff. So tell me the other sort of describe your shop. You know, if people come in, is it huge? Do you have like everything color coordinated? You know, how do you sort of lay things out for when people walk in?
Well, it's quite interesting. I you know, the shop is quite, how can I describe it? I think sometimes when people come in for the first time, they're slightly overwhelmed because I tend to buy fabric that excites my eye. I like really strong graphic stripes. I like big, bold prints. I like lots of daring use of color. Mm-hmm. And I guess I always imagine, you know, I'm quite a traditional quilter. And I always imagine that if I was one of those gals sitting around in Baltimore or on the Prairie Trail or wherever she was making quilts, mm-hmm. if she could have the fabrics we have today, she would definitely be using them. You know, the color is exciting. It touches our heart. It gives mm-hmm. us something to play with. So I think sometimes when you go into a shop, they tend to have a collection of very safe fabrics, but we're just the opposite. I hardly have any tone on tones. I hardly have any really small little bitsy patterns. Most of my things are very exciting. So it's the place generally where I would suggest people start looking for fabric because they're the inspiration pieces. And then you can link mm-hmm. back everything else that you have in your stash at home, all the pieces that you collect because you think you're going to use them with these very much more dramatic pieces. Does that make sense?
It does. So there's a lot of large scale. When you go to Kathy's site, materialobsession.typepad.com, which is where her blog is, you can see lots of pictures of quilts. That's why I go there, Kathy, because I want to see what everybody's doing with all this.
Well,
really,
you can imagine what
stuff.
That does to our heads. You know, we're there every day. I have a fabulous team of people. I've been running the shop on my own. I guess Sarah left about 5 years ago. So 5 years of building relationships with lots of other people means that we do touch on, like, I've got Wendy Williams, who's a very primary designer. She works a lot with wool felt. Mm-hmm. And her designs are all really very happy. And then there's another designer, Kath Babbage, and her stuff is very eclectic and really sort of contemporary, modern, you know, in taupes and browns and golds. Mm-hmm. And Megan Manwaring is another new designer in the shop, and her work is also very she's younger than us, so she's trending more in line with contemporary use of fabrics as well. So all of us work together and complement and fill in the gaps where, you know, our personal strengths let us down. So
we're going to take a little break here and then we'll come right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts and More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. We're counting on you.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm talking to Kathy Dowdy from Material Obsessions. Kathy, tell me a little bit about your favorite quilt that you're working on right now. I mean, do you work on more than one at once? Because, you know, besides being a shop owner, you're and a designer. I mean, you make quilts all the time. You're quite prolific.
Yeah, I tend to balance between projects that I can complete in a weekend, say, you know, using a template or a ruler, and just to get the urge out, like if a new range comes in and I just have to play with it, mm-hmm. I'll try to whip up something really quick. But one of the things that we've seen happening, one of the trends in the shop over the last 4 or 5 years has been a bit of handwork. So applique and hexagons are on the radar, shall I say. And mm-hmm. When I got breast cancer earlier in the year, I sat in the hospital with some pre-cut hexagons sewing together some stars. So I have to say my ever-growing hexagon star quilt is my mm-hmm. favorite, because it was it distracted me from what was happening yeah. in my life at the time and kept my hands busy and lightened my load considerably. So I love that. Probably it's not fair to say that without saying the quilt that I'm working on with the new fabric range will be my yes. next favorite quilt.
Of course it is.
Yeah, so it's sort of like being a schizophrenic. You know, sometimes I really have to just work very quickly and make something super easy. And other times and now more and more as I add layers of understanding of technique and making quilts, I like to explore other different things that might take a little bit more time.
You know, one of the things that I see that happens with your personal quilts and your customers' quilts, your students' quilts from your shop is the exuberant patterns and how you, all of you sort of, just with wild abandon put it all together. And that's what I find really fascinating. And I think that's what makes some people hyperventilate. You know, they'll look at a quilt and they'll go, oh my gosh, how would I ever do that? Does that happen slowly for some people, or are you all just sort of jumping in and just throwing it all together?
Well, it's my personal vendetta in the shop to create a space where people feel really comfortable exploring their own personal needs. I would never say to somebody, you're not allowed to do that. That won't work. No, that's going to be ugly. We never, ever judge what's coming from the individual quilter. So once you set that platform up to say, okay, this is your time to express yourself, that's when the wonderful things start to happen. Because there's one thing to go out and to make a quilt that you see as you see it. And there are types of people that like to recreate that perfectly. And that is perfectly fine. But the people that are gravitating to the shop and to the classes are people who want to go beyond that and add themselves into their work. And I think if we look at traditional quilts and we look at the products that inspire us, I mean, I will often spend hours just leafing through antique quilt books. But I do that because I'm attracted to the individual that I see making those quilts. And I want to become that individual. I want people in the future to understand who I am by looking at my quilts. So that's the challenge that we put forth. And when people feel comfortable enough, they start taking a little bit of chance. I think that's when you see the originality come out. And that's I'm thinking is appealing to you.
It's totally, it's so great. And you've taken it, what I like is that you've taken it and put it into pattern books so that, you know, it's hard when we all make pattern books or single patterns to, you know, we want to sell them. And a lot of times people look at all of this exuberance and they're like, oh, you know, I can't make it just like that. But you know, your whole book is great because it's full of these. What is your current book on the market, the one that's the most recently out there?
Well, the book that I have out now has had such a steady momentum of growth. I think it's the kind of thing where, you know, there's a lot of choice out there for quilt books, but Making Quilts is my most recent book. It's been published by C&T, so it's available in America now, which is fabulous. Mm-hmm. And It's got 21 projects in it, and they are they range from scrap quilts to applique. Each one tells a different story. But what I tried to do, I mean, everything I do is in response to the experience I have in the shop. And after 10 years of working in the shop and working with each customer that comes in, I understand their needs. And the fact is that most of the time you look at a quilt in a book and you can't get those fabrics anymore. So you need to understand how to make appropriate substitutions. And I'd say if I have one strength in my life, that's what it is. I can look at something and scan the shop and find something that will do as similar a job as what the original does. So in that, in making quilts, I want to enable the people that read that book to make their quilts with that same kind of confidence. So both in technique and in the concept, like, this is where I was trying to go, and then give them the freedom to say, this is where I went, but you can go someplace different. You can start here and end up someplace else, and that is perfectly okay. So that, yeah.
I was going to say, do you have a tip for somebody who's, let's say they're looking at one of your quilts that has like a lot of different patterned prints, you know, so there really isn't that sort of restful spot in some of them. They're really all very exuberant, you know. I love them. And you know, but you know, somebody who loves that but has never done it before, what kind of tip can you give them for jumping in?
I think the way that I managed to control that, and you know, and to be fair, I've been fine-tuning that. When I first started making quilts, it was way over the top. It was just complete chaos and bedlam. So I try to pull back a little bit, and it's about making the choices along the way that relate to your first choice. So I often decide in the very beginning, this is where I want this quilt to go. And it might be based on a photograph of a quilt, or it might be based on a piece of fabric that I want to be, you know, the color palette for the for that quilt. Or it might be a concept, or like if it's a memory quilt or whatever, you know. Or I once did a portrait of my husband and I was looking at a black and white photo. I wanted to make it look as real as I could to that. So having an initial concept and keeping that present in your working process is, that's how I do it. Now, I think it, in some cases it takes a bit of practice, but if you start with one piece of fabric and make sure that every fabric that goes in relates to that in some way, that helps to give you a thread of continuity throughout your project.
Yeah, I like that idea, because I'm looking at one called Doves in the Window, which has these big stars, which have a light and dark to them. And then you have this wonderful plaid, which would be what most people would call the background. And then your sashing is this super exuberant print, but all the colors are cohesive.
Okay, with that particular quilt, the inspiration was the sashing fabric, which was the bird fabric. And then, yeah, it was the bird fabric. And I just loved the colors in that. I think people always think of me as being a bright quilter, but I actually really love earthy colors. And so that was my starting point with that. And way, I think it was that quilt that when I declared plaid as the new black, I really love the fact that plaid gives energy and direction and movement to your background. So we use a lot of plaids and a lot of stripes just to add just a touch of, wait, what is that I'm looking at? You know, just a little bit of daring.
Now, you travel and teach. People could actually take a workshop with you. Do you keep your schedule on your website?
Yeah, I wish. we're getting better at managing information flow. It's a big job to run a shop, teach, travel, have kids. I have three grown young men living at home. So yeah, there are challenges, but we are getting better at that. I am coming to the States this year. I'm going to be in Pittsburgh for market, and I'm working with Three Rivers Quilt Group there, and the Modern Quilt Group there, and a couple of other locations as well. So I will be getting that up on the website, hopefully in the next couple of weeks.
And the other great thing is, for those who can't actually see you in a in a personal workshop, is that you're teaching for Creative Bug. That's exciting.
Oh, yeah. I love the Creative Bug website. They have the most beautiful style and the greatest understanding of the artist's statement. So I'd say the most fun that I've had doing anything in my quilt life was working with the Creative Bug people last July doing those videos. One of them is something everybody can have fun with, and that's the Dresden Plate Ruler, and that's in my book, and If you don't have a Dresden plate ruler, rush out right now and get one. And the other project is a Wagga, which is the quintessential Australian quilt. It's made of wool. And the one I took a slightly modern twist on it and did great big stars. But both of those videos are, I'm really proud of them. They were really fun to do. And I think they sort of expand people's understanding of what they're doing when you can actually see someone going through the process themselves.
Yeah, I think there's so many people who love to watch videos to learn, you know, so that they can take the book and read about it. Then they can have the visual and the and so you also love templates. Speaking of that Dresden,
The Dresden plate. Yeah.
Yes. Tell me about the templates.
I can't tell that without giving credit to my father, because when I was visiting home once, we went into a patchwork shop, and he's a very lateral thinking kind of guy. And he said, "Hey, you know, Kath, what do you think about this? What is this thing?" And I said, "I don't know, Dad, but I'll get it," because I thought, oh, I'll just humor him. He's interested in what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It was a 60 degree creative grid ruler. And from that moment on, everything changed for me, because not having the innate understanding of fabrics that some people who've sewn their whole life have, I love the fact that I can use a shape, I can cut accurately, therefore I can sew accurately, and I can repeat what I'm doing accurately. And that is essential when you're quilting, and especially if you're a new quilter, to be able to have the confidence to go forth with your technique. That's a really good thing.
You know, when you're using the rulers, are you starching the fabric? Do you feel that helps you? I was just wondering, particularly because especially when you're cutting wedges and things like that are going to end up with bias.
No, I understand that there are lots of people that do that. Mm-hmm. I am an impulsive quilter, so mm-hmm. I generally get the bolt, cut the fabric, cut the shape, sew it together. I don't pre-wash. I don't, if it's wrinkled, I'll press it so I can cut accurately, but mm-hmm. I'm pretty organic in how I approach it. It's just, if I feel like doing it, I'm going to do it right now. That's probably the quilt police probably don't think that's right, but for me it works. So I do that, and I've got about 300 quilts done that way. So it can't be all bad.
No, it can't be all. I know I'm very impatient quilter, and I don't wash my fabric either for the most part. You know, it's just
I want to do it. I want to enjoy it. And I have to do it when it hits me.
Yes. You just want to make it now. Make it now. That's all. So let's see. We only have about less than a minute. So tell me, is there any other sort of major thing you'd like to share?
I do have a new book coming out in February with C&T called Adding Layers. And this is sort of the, when I write a book, I try to think about where I am as a quilter, because I think lots of people are following in the same footsteps. They start out quilting and then they grow and grow and grow. So this book is about going a little bit deeper into A, using your stash, B, using templates, and C, using your imagination, because those three things are critical for making personal quilts. You really need to understand your imagination and how you engage in your quilt project so that it becomes something that is made of you.
Kathy, this has been wonderful. I'm going to need that book. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and enjoy your day, because it is morning where you are.
It's morning and it's boiling already. It's very hot. I heard you talk about ice. I thought, yikes, I wish.
Well, thanks again.
Thanks very much for calling, Pat. This has been fun.
This is Pat Sloan for American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. You can visit us online at allpeoplequilt.com. You can visit me at patsloan.com.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks.